This episode of the PHP Architect Podcast is brought to you by the CodeWorks 2009 Conference Series, coming soon to a city near you. For more information, visit cw.mtacon.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the PHP Architect Podcast. We're back on the air after a rather long hiatus. We've been busy and lots of things have happened around here, and so I've now taken this over. I'm Marco Tavini, and as you've heard, we have a whole new music introductory introducing the webcast, and of course we have a whole new voice guy. We tried to go out and find the movie phone guy, but he was not available. So we got the next best thing. Here with me tonight we have Keith Casey. Hey Keith.
Hello there, how's it going?
Wonderful. Keith, why don't you introduce yourself very quickly?
Oh, I'm Keith Casey. I'm CTO of Blue Parabola, where I work with Marco, and I'm sort of fallen into the being one of the unconference guys. I've done unconference at ZenCon, doing it again this coming time around, did it at PHP Tech, and obviously heavily involved with stuff like Barcamp DC and the DC-based stuff.
So basically they call you when something needs to be unorganized.
Basically, yeah. I've sort of mastered unorganizing things.
Okay, cool. Also with us is Beth Tucker. Hey, Beth.
Hey, Marco.
Why don't you introduce yourself, too?
Okay, I'm Beth Tucker Long, and I am the editor-in-chief of PHP Architect magazine. So I also work with Marco, and actually with Keith also.
And of course, by work with Marco, you mean you send me emails every 20 seconds because you want next month's column.
Well, if you'd turn it in on time, you wouldn't get any emails from me.
See? I got no respect. And finally, also is with us tonight is Davey Shafiq. Hey, Davey.
Hey, Marco. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Why don't you tell us...
Nice and hot here in Florida.
Yes. Well, this time of year, it doesn't really make that much difference. Florida, Toronto, it's all horrible or cold.
There's one big difference.
That's right.
I have a pool in the backyard.
And for that, everybody hates you.
I know.
Why don't you just introduce yourself?
I'm Davey Shafiq. I just kind of hang around the community. I speak. I write software involved with pairs and framework, a whole bunch of stuff. Just try to get out there and do whatever I can to help people.
Okay, wonderful. So before we go any further, there's a couple of things that I wanted to mention. One is, of course, that I am Marco Tavini, and I no longer know exactly what I do for a living. And what my job is at PHP Architect. People just let me kind of hang around here and answer the phone. Those of you who've heard me in the past know that I don't usually do the podcast with PHP Architect. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that I feel like I have a really horrible nasal voice and I'm very self-conscious about that. So every time I hear myself speak, I feel like I've had some sort of horrible operation to my nose. But I've gotten over that. And the other thing is, of course, that whenever I meet somebody, everybody seems to think that I, for some reason, should have some sort of stereotypically horrible Italian accent. So everybody expects me to speak like the Super Mario. And, I mean, I obviously have an accent because I spent the first 20 years of my life in another country, but I don't speak all like this. So, if you're expecting a Super Mario, I'm sorry to disappoint you, and get over it. So, on to the topic of this podcast. We have a couple of things we wanted to talk about, but I think the big news recently has been a series of benchmarks that Joe Stagner for Microsoft, PHP guy, one of Microsoft's PHP guys, did a whole set of benchmarks on PHP versus .NET and PHP on Linux versus PHP on Windows, and the results were actually quite surprising. And there's been a lot of discussion going on this particular topic in the community for a while now. So I'd like your reactions to this. Keith, what do you think?
Oh, it's actually hilarious. I didn't catch the article the first time around, but Brandon Savage is DC based, and he wrote a couple scathing responses to it, and so I caught it sort of secondhand through him. And it's just been amazing how Joe, as much as a good guy as he was, didn't seem to approach things the same way across the side. It wasn't sort of apples to apples there. And it looks like he sort of paid for it in terms of the stress and angst he got. And to be honest, I haven't looked a great deal at his methodology. The numbers, though, looking at the raw numbers, they're 100 times off. I mean, there's 100 times difference between the two, between ASP.NET and the PHP test. So that to me says there's something wrong. I mean, you don't see 100 times performance difference out of the box most of the times on stuff like that.
Do you think that's I mean, do you think it's even possible to compare apples to apples in this case? I mean, we're talking about two completely different platforms, two completely different languages. Does it even make sense to run a benchmark like this?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure how you could possibly do it, just because, I mean, ASP.NET itself is basically a framework. I mean, it has the whole Microsoft, all their stuff built into it. So it's almost, I mean, it almost seems like ASP.NET versus Rails might be a better comparison, or versus Cake or something.
Right.
Versus raw PHP doesn't seem like it makes sense.
Okay, well, I guess my gripe with it is, well, not necessarily a gripe. It's more of a question. My perspective on performance is that if you think you need to worry about performance, you're probably right. But for the most part, that's, way down the list of things you should be worrying about. Because the vast majority of websites don't really have a performance issue that can be fixed by switching from one language to another. So, performance as measured by benchmarks, to me, has always been kind of pointless. The only true way, the only real way to measure performance would be to get two groups of people, two teams, building the same application using two different tool sets, and then see which one comes up with the best result, because everything else is just going to be contrived.
But even then, sorry, go ahead, Davey.
I think everybody agrees it's there's so much more to it than just the language. I mean, your disk and your hardware and your database selection is a really big one. Down to your web server that you can't just base your decision on the platform. And, if you're using ASP with MS SQL Server, it's going to be better than using it with PHP. And so you can't like do apples to apples. ASP with MySQL is not as good as PHP with MySQL, and vice versa with MS SQL Server. Sorry. So I don't think you can ever compare it. If it does what you want, who cares? If it, if it's within your parameters of what's fast enough, what does it matter?
Well, that's exactly my point. I mean, any kind of test you do is going to be skewed somehow. It's either going to be because it's just an abstract comparison between two languages or two platforms that has no real reflection in a real life situation. Or if it's, a real life situation, then you're really comparing. I mean, are you really comparing the power of two platforms, or are you comparing the ability of two different groups of people to apply their knowledge to those platforms?
Well, in their paradigm, because I mean, when you're using a tool like ASP.NET or PHP or Rails or whatever, you're going to approach a certain type of problem with this from a certain point of view, from with a certain mindset. So you're not just comparing the languages themselves.
Well, yeah, that's
Absolutely.
true.
Joe did a great job of trying to keep things the same. However, in doing so, what he's really comparing is not necessarily the speed of the two languages themselves, but the speed of the default installs for those languages, because he didn't go through and make sure they had the same, one of the big things on the message, well, not the message boards, but the comments on the blog post were talking about all the caching and things like that, how ASP.NET has caching in the default installation, whereas PHP does not. So that's a major difference in speed right there. So it kind of seemed like what Joe was really comparing was the speed of the default installations as opposed to the actual languages themselves.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a possibility. Sorry, David, go on.
He went back and, you know, tried to get APC installed and all that sort of stuff. I don't know if he's finished that yet, but I think you're right. He was comparing the default, so now he's trying to go back and see how far he can push things to get things closer to, you know, what the default in ASP is, to how you can, you know, make PHP more like it with caching and such. And, I mean, that's more real world. I mean, any developer worth his salt is going to consider, you know, APC. At the very least, he's going to consider it.
Well, yeah, but again, you know, what I question is simply how many people are going to find these things actually useful. Like, my concern is, what is he trying to prove? I mean, okay, so PHP on Windows seems to be faster in some cases than PHP on Linux. That's great, but again, there are so many different variables that I'm not really sure that any of these are actually not skewing the results in a way that is going to just going to make them completely difficult, impossible to reproduce at some point. But the one thing that I did want to two things actually I wanted to sort of extrapolate from the whole discussion that happened around these benchmarks that he did. One is, I thought that the overall response from the community was very polite. I didn't see much in the way of jerks responding to Joe's benchmarks with nasty comments. And I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I thought that was particularly interesting, and I was wondering whether any other community would have reacted the same way to something like that, because it's nice to see actually people, yes, questioning the methodology, questioning the results, but not in such a way that they just question them on the basis that Joe works for Microsoft.
I think part of that is attributed to the fact that Joe has a lot of respect garnered in the PHP community. I mean, he's got out there, he's had a beer with us, and he's a really good guy, and I don't think anybody disputes that. And I think he's done a wonderful job for, you know, the credibility of Microsoft. And you know, they are really trying, I think, to approach us and work with us. And they're not doing that with Ruby, you know, to my knowledge. They're not doing it with the Python guys in the same sort of way. I think that's a lot of it. I really think Microsoft's credibility has gone up a lot to where we're still a little standoffish and wary, but we do give them some respect.
Well, yeah, we PHP Architect had a whole issue dedicated to Windows, and I had sort of steeled myself for a deluge of, oh my god, PHP Architect is sold out to Microsoft comments, which of course is not true. I mean, that was planned well in advance of when it was published. So it was something that we wanted to do just because we've seen PHP on Windows become more and more relevant. But all I got was a couple of comments on Twitter about the fact that the issue was PHP on Windows. And my response to that was, well, it's a free issue. Maybe you can learn something from it. So, I think the whole community has sort of taken a lot of interest in what Microsoft is doing with PHP. They've certainly put a lot of effort into trying to fit in, as opposed to just trying to storm the community, which is, you know, something they could have done and they would have probably failed miserably. The other thing that I thought was interesting about Joe's post, especially his follow-up post, was the fact that he himself mentions that these benchmarks are sort of pointless on their own, and that the real point of interest is the total cost of ownership. And I remember in particular in his blog he mentioned that he has, you know, that both Microsoft and Zend can make good points as to why Windows and .NET have a lower TCO on one end, and Zend's products and PHP have a lower TCO on the other. And that really is the crux of the matter. I mean, at the end of the day, whether one system is faster or not is only a piece of the puzzle. And the real issue is whether a particular system, a particular platform, fits your needs or not. And there are tons and tons of different considerations that go into whether the total cost of ownership is lower on one end and the other. And I don't think there is any one way to say it's always lower on one platform compared to another. So I thought that was a very important point, and I'm glad that, you know, he didn't just gloss over it, but I like the fact that Joe was really open from the get-go, and he said, don't make too much out of these results. They're just a curiosity, just a starting point for a discussion, as opposed to coming in and say, oh, hey, look, PHP on Windows is the best thing since sliced bread met Nutella. So I like that. I don't know what you guys think about it, but I really liked the whole. I liked the approach that he took, and I liked the response from the community. I thought it was really good.
Well, let me throw out a question about the community. I mean, you and numerous other people have talked about how sort of the community has changed over the last probably 2 or 3 years. It's become obvious. There's, you know, a little more gray hair in the sessions, a little more a mature discussion of not just here's how to use this cool new tool. It's more about here's how to improve your process. Do you think that the response to Joe came as a result of some of that? Sort of a more pragmatic look at things?
Well, you know, I think so. There's definitely a lot more gray hair in the community. All you need to do is look at IRC and look at the topic on HashPHPC. Basically, it's just a long string of birth announcements. And that, to me, is more of an indication of the fact that we're all maturing, we're all getting older than anything else. And certainly, you know, one thing that I've seen, I've now been in this community for at least 7 or 8 years, and the one thing that I've noticed is that when I started working with PHP, PHP was the language or the platform that used to get into companies through the back door, usually through some executive requesting some sort of report to be done in record time. And all of a sudden they say, oh, you know, I can't do this with insert official corporate platform of choice here. And they go and choose PHP. And then these people, though, have then evolved themselves, and now we have, you know, we're talking with the director of IT at a company or the VP of development. So it's not just the lowly guy who's trying to get something done. It's the whole enterprise now is embracing PHP.
But yeah, I think Marco touched on this a bit too, but yeah, I think PHP is gaining a wider acceptance in the enterprise. So the people involved in it are not just all of us kids that love PHP and we love it because it's our language, but now it's an actual business choice. And so the discussions about it are becoming a lot more enterprise level as well.
Right. And I'm seeing that in higher education too. I mean, we, you know, deal with a lot of public RFPs and such. And, you know, there's people offering web objects and all sorts of crazy stuff and DB2 and Oracle. And we go in there with PHP and MySQL and we don't get laughed out of the room anymore. I mean, it's straight up right there. It's a viable language, even in, you know, the slow moving world of higher education.
Right. Absolutely. So anyway, moving on to another topic that is near to my heart. As you know, there is a rather large series of conferences called South by Southwest every year, and this year I actually decided to submit a talk proposal to their call for papers. And in case you feel generous and you want to vote for me, we'll put the link to the proposal in the notes for the podcast. But I just want to make a public appeal to the organizers of South by Southwest, please, please do something about your submission process, because it drove me nuts. My half of my proposal got mangled by your system, and the other half was having to answer 10 questions, actually having to come up with 10 questions and 10 answers to my own proposal. And I don't know about everybody else. I mean, all of you here have done public speaking, some of you more than others, but when I prepare a talk, I consider the talk successful, the entire presentation successful, if I manage to pass along one or two key concepts to the audience. And the idea of finding 10 things that a one-hour presentation or a 45-minute presentation should pass along to an audience, to me, it just sounds completely ridiculous. I don't know what you guys think. It just, it cannot be done. I mean, 45 minutes, you're lucky if you can pass along one main concept.
And so, wait a minute. There are sessions at South by Southwest?
What do you mean?
Oh, I didn't realize there are sessions. I mean, I've only been there once, admittedly, this past year, but it's Geek Spring Break. I mean, that's majority of it. I mean, you go there are sessions. There are dozens of amazing sessions. I mean, I could talk for hours on a couple of them, but there's a lot of going to be seen there. There's a lot of going to rebuild connections, connect up with other people, stuff like that. So I think they're trying to raise the bar, because if you look, there's something, I want to say there's like 2,500 sessions submitted or something ridiculous. So I suspect they're trying to weed people out that way.
I suppose, but it's possible. It just drove me insane, because of course they waited until the last minute to do it, and then having to come up with 10 different questions and 10 different answers about a 45 minute session just drove me insane. And of course, you know, a lot of people, when we do our conferences, a lot of people always write to me and say, oh, why don't you have a formal system for sending in proposals? And my answer is that, generally speaking, I'd rather the individual presenters came up with their own description, with their own format, because that's the best way for us to judge whether a proposal has meat attached to it, as opposed to artificially coming up with a set of criteria and trying to fit every possible scenario in them. And it's actually, you know, it actually works really well. It's a pain, of course, having to go through every single submission, but I much prefer it our way than having to go through this carnage of coming up with information that doesn't necessarily apply.
What would be your suggestion to the South by Southwest guys? Just kind of limit the number of questions, you know, two or three, make, you know, the 10 optional, and if you don't put them in, you know, that's your downfall kind of thing? Or,
well,
I mean...
Well, they have a public voting system, so you can go on their website, and they have a voting system that allows you to vote your favorite... the vote for your favorite sessions. So I would say that just leaving it up to the individual speaker to come up with a well-written proposal would be more than enough. Because if a person can come up with a good, well-written proposal, I can assure you that most likely they also will come up with a good talk. And conversely, you know, if they can't come up with a good proposal, most likely they don't know what they're talking about.
Let me throw out a little bit of data here. I'm logged into the South by Southwest panel picker right now. In the film side, there are 142 submissions, and that runs the entire 10 days of the festival. The music portion, which is just the last 5 days, has 297, and the interactive, which is the first 5 days, has 2,211.
That's awesome.
Is it really anything more than a popularity contest at the end of the day, though? I mean, I'm sure, you know, 70% of the votes are nothing more than somebody going, I want to... You know, so-and-so to speak, here's a click, not even bothering to read what you write.
Yeah, and I suspect a lot of it is that, and people, I mean, people tweet their stuff and say, hey, come vote for me, and so that definitely has a lot to do with it. I think it's just the sheer number of it. They want to raise that bar and make it a little bit more difficult because, I mean, come on, you have 142 in film and 2,200 on the interactive side.
That's kind of sad, actually.
The interactive should be running the 10 days and the film should be running the 5.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
Hey.
Actually, this year I was there for interactive, but I managed to get into a handful of films and they were excellent. I mean, it was just a complete blast. I had a number of friends get into other films and meet key actors. I don't remember their name. Oh, John Lithgow. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, names that people recognize, and it's kind of cool. So I wouldn't ever consider to scale down the film or anything like that. It's just an amazing experience all the way around. I was just happy on the panel picker side of things that they've made it simpler. Last year, it was like a 1-5 score with 5 being the best. This year, it's a straight up down.
Right.
Makes it so much easier.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it was just so complicated to submit something to them, and for all the wrong reasons. I mean, I had a really good idea what I wanted to propose. And, I mean, you guys have seen me speak, and you've seen my approach to preparing a talk. I mean, it's all about coming up with a key concept that I want to communicate, and then trying to look at that key concept from a number of different perspectives. And it's just painful when you have to somehow come up with 10 different things that allegedly you want to be able to tell. I mean, it's just impossible. It just doesn't work that way. Anyway, I just wanted to get it out there. I had to vent. This thing drove me nuts, and I just needed to get it out there. And I have a podcast to do that. Is there anything that you guys want to vent about? No? Come on, it's got to be separate.
I don't think I have anything to vent about. I would like to say congratulations to Andre, who was sworn in for his U.S. citizenship today. That was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, Andre, if you happen to be listening, congratulations. I'm sure you've heard also that Andre left Dig now. We'll be. I'll be wondering what is up to next. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering what is going to be up to next.
Not just him, but Chris Shiflett too is obviously kind of out in the ether at the moment.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see where they both go.
Yep. Of course, with Andre out of Dig now, you have to wonder what's going to happen to PHP 6. You know, I don't know if any of you have had a chance to play around with 5.3 yet. I just installed a virtual machine with 5.3 and tried to run all our stuff, and it seems to be running okay. I mean, all our tests are passing, but I'm not going to deploy it for a while. I sort of suspect that 5.3 is a way of giving people a taste of 6.0 without actually getting 6.0 anywhere. I don't know. What do you guys think? What do you think?
It's really a tough call. I mean, they managed to squeeze so much into 5.3 that was originally slated for 6.0, and I think they've done their best to kind of minimize impact, backwards compatibility and such. But it's a tough call. I mean, you know, Red Hat Enterprise Linux is still running 5.1. So I mean, they're not going to get there anytime soon. I think it's just kind of frustrating, really, for, you know, starting a new project now. And are we going to see wide adoption in a year, 2 years? How long is it going to take? Is it going to take as long as 6.0 would have? Is 6.0 going to be done before, you know, by the time 5.3 even, you know, gets considered by the big distributions? So I guess it's kind of a double-edged sword. They put so much in it, and they have, you know, tweaked backwards compatibility a bit. Are we not going to get it in any reasonable time to actually take advantage of namespaces and all the other good stuff?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you can use big distributions as a good indicator of how popular or how useful 5.3 is going to be. I mean, I'm somewhat surprised that even on OS 10, there's 5.2 installed. I was really surprised when I saw that, and I did the last software update, 5.2.5 came up.
That's been that way since Leopard came out, and before that it was 5.1, but I mean 5.2 was up to 5.24 or something like that. And obviously we never saw that in Tiger, and obviously people are still using Tiger. I mean, you know, I know clients that we have are still using CentOS, you know, 4.something. So I guess maybe if it really matters, you'll do a custom install of 5.3 anyways, and you're not relying on a package system. So
yeah, well, I don't think I know anyone who uses the stock PHP installs anywhere. I've always done a recompile every time. I don't compile Apache anymore, but PHP is always a recompile.
I've been that way, but when you're distributing software, especially, I mean, Keith, you can probably attest to this with Web2 project. When you're trying to get it out to an unknown audience, and they're typically not, you know, developers. They're trying to use software, and they've got to get it installed. You know, it's like trying to develop software for Windows 7 that's not backwards compatible for XP, and there's still a whole bunch of people on XP. You have to take it into account. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's not just about what the development team wants, and you know, when you're in a little ecosystem, you know, like a lot of us are, yeah, that's fine. But when you're trying to distribute a project to an unknown audience, the stock PHPs are very important.
Yeah, I would agree with Davey. I think we have a little bit of selection bias. I mean, I know most of you guys, and who the sorts of people I interact with on a daily basis are, you know, the smart people, some of the top people in the community. So in Web to Project specifically, back in, I want to say January or so of this year, so it was 5 or 6 months after PHP 4 was officially end of life, we broke PHP 4 compatibility using crazy things like public and private and stuff like that. And we had a handful of people that just absolutely threw a fit. And they said, look, we want to engage, we want to have PHP 4 compatibility. And we just said, no, based on the object model and what we're doing it with abstract classes and everything, it just doesn't make sense to do that anymore. And but we did it in January, and then we did our first 1.0 release in the beginning of June. So they had plenty of time to update and everything like that. But just the annoyance. So there are some things in 5.3 that I'd love to. I'm not so big on the namespaces, but FAR, the PHP archive, I came from a Java background, so FAR just makes so much sense to me, and it's so appealing, and it would get people to stop hacking core. So I love it, and I don't honestly think we'll be able to even consider using it until sometime next year.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of... There are lots of really neat features in 5.3, I thought. I just did a very quick tour. And I'm starting to think that a lot of people have made a lot of noise about namespaces, but frankly, I'm not so sure that that's really the big feature. There's a lot more to just namespaces there, so it's really cool.
The big feature I was looking forward to is traits, and it didn't make it into 5.3, so I'm still on the lookout for something better.
Cool.
5.4, 6.0, whatever that's going to be. But I mean, I know for us, we're about to embark on a rewrite. We're not going to have anything ready for a year, so we can actually seriously look at 5.3. But if it was for current development, something that's going to go out soon, not even a chance.
Right. Well, before we close down, Beth, you've been awfully quiet. So I thought I'd ask you if you want to give people a preview of what's coming up for the next issue of PHP Architect.
Sure, we've got lots of good stuff coming up for PHP Architect. One of my favorite topics is regexes, because I'm really terrible at regex, and so I always love reading about it and learning new things about it. And we've got a great article coming up in the next issue that takes us step by step through a regex for validating email addresses, which is something most of us have to do every time we make a project. So that one's very good. We've got a great thing on Doctrine coming up as well. So if you want to know more about Doctrine. And then a really interesting one that I learned a lot about was a program called Adminer, which is similar to PHP MyAdmin, but all encompassed in one file. So a much faster install and a much easier install if you have to install it on a client server and then take it off. So you don't have to wait for thousands of files to load before you can use it. So Adminer was a really interesting article as well. So keep an eye out for those.
Wonderful. Well, guys, I want to thank you all for being with us. And of course, thank you as well if you're listening in. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks or something like that, depending on how soon we can record another one of these. In the meantime, stay cool and take care. Bye.
It's a spicy meatball.